syndicated source material.
Okay, it's time again for another episode of syndicated source material. Oh boy, we're getting into our 14th episode here. This is What If Volume 2, Number 4. We recorded this live on Blog Talk Radio. This was recorded on December 26th, 2014. Ronnie Adams coming back for another appearance. The original length of this podcast was 1 hour and 23 minutes. Got it down to a little bit under 50 minutes here for the syndicated version of this podcast. You can tell that I was still getting used to having a guest on, trying to structure a show. Ronnie and I kind of split the book, the synopsis of the book, and what's happening there. I take the first half, he takes the second. There were quite a few instances, obviously edited out for the syndicated version of this podcast, where Blog Talk audio issues prevented Ronnie from hearing me. There was a few times I had to get in there and repeat the question. So anyway, took that out. Hopefully it all sounds pretty seamless. All right, so here we go. This is What If, Volume 2, Number 4. What if the alien costume had possessed Spider-Man? Enjoy.
Good evening, folks. It's the day after Christmas. Welcome to another episode of Source Material. I'm your host, as always, Jesse Starcher, and what we're attempting to do here is we're going to do our best to give you some, let's just say, abbreviated summary of some of the great and not so great story arcs. And now that we're in the Christmas season, I mentioned this on the last episode we had, we're kind of focusing on the what ifs for the next week or so. And I'm just kind of hopping in there in some of the open spots on the Rattlitch and Broadcasting Network and giving some holiday cheer by spreading some comic book goodness, I guess you would say. Now, joining me tonight, provided everything is good to go here, we have Ronnie Adams from the Screaming Boy podcast. Ronnie, is everything working all right on your end?
It seems like it is so far.
If it pops in and out, man, just let me know. I'll disconnect you, and then you can, like, reconnect. Maybe that'll work. But how was your Christmas, my man?
It was fantastic, man. How was yours?
You posted a picture of a movie that I think your sister meant to get me.
I think so. It's actually the entire trilogy.
Oh, was it really? It wasn't just, I thought it was the first, I thought it was the first Back to the Future.
Yeah,
it was the entire trilogy. Oh man, I bet that thing has got some great extras on it, I'm sure, man. Like, did you see, is there any like commentaries or anything like that?
I haven't got to dive into it yet. I got home last night from seeing family at around 20 to 1 and had to be up at work at 8:30 this morning.
You're a trooper, I'll tell you that much. Dang. Well, I can tell you, Back to the Future, I know I put this on there. I'm absolutely 100% being truthful when I think it's one of my, personally, it is my favorite movie of all time. I can remember when the trilogy came out for the DVD set back in, I would say it was probably 2003, I think, maybe 2002, 2003, when the first trilogy came out, and I went to, I'm pretty sure it was Walmart, and was there after midnight, right when it released, and picked it up and went home, and I think I tried to make it through the first one and was watching the commentary and stuff like that. But yeah. Well, let's just say I'm fairly jealous. That's a pretty awesome gift. But tonight we are doing one of your picks for the what ifs. This is something that I've never had a chance to read until probably about, I don't know, it was about a week ago after you suggested it. I knew it was out there. I just never had a chance to read it. This is titled What If the Alien Costume Possessed Spider-Man?
Right.
Is there a reason why you had this was like top of the list for your what ifs?
This is one of my favorite what ifs, mainly because I'm a huge Spider-Man fan. It's kind of crazy, and it dives into, I mean, you know, what if he had kept the alien symbiote? What would have happened to him? It really kind of stuck out. You know, 89. Gosh, I forget how old I was, but I was just getting into comic books, and it was one of those things where I was like, this. So many weird things happening, and I was like, this can't happen to Spider-Man. So I mean, it's always stuck out in my mind, and I've loved it because of that.
So this is something you bought off the newsstand?
Yes, sir. I've got the issue right in front of me.
Oh, nice, man. I think that for me, the What If series, I don't know if I've touched on this in the last episode, but I think the first ever What If, I somehow ended up with What If number 1, volume 2, number 1. I think which was the, I want to say it was What If the Avengers had lost the Evolutionary War. And I remember picking that up. And for myself, I'm a big fan of like alternate history. I'm huge into What If. As a matter of fact, I bought a book a while back, which actually was titled What If. It was totally not comic book related, where they had taken moments in our history and kind of storytellers, you know, spun off of that, which I thought was extremely interesting. But yeah, I think I ended up getting volume 2, number 1. And of course, I was young enough to where I was like, man, this is pretty cool, but I didn't get into going to the newsstand and looking for them. I don't know about you, but in my day, back when I was buying comics in like 89 or something like that, my town did not have a comic book.
Mine did not either. I was always buying at the grocery store.
Grocery store? I was going to, you've ever heard of People's News?
Yeah, actually.
People's News was, it was right down here at one of the main streets in Marietta. We would go right down there and just back in facing the rear. That was the little shelf devoted to comics. And that was about the only place I could regularly go and count on something being there. Like, you know, when I started collecting the X titles, that was one place I could go and actually depend on seeing X-Factor, X-Men in a sequential form. A lot of times, man, if you went to like a grocery store, it was hit and miss.
In my town, the town up in Logan, West Virginia, there was a comic book shop, and it was run by a man named Gus Winter. Can't remember what his shop's name was, but he had a really cool comic book shop, and I would, special occasions, I would get to go in there, and I would just load up.
I had a similar situation here, Parkersburg, which is right across the river. Man, it wasn't, let's just say it was like off the side of the road, but and no advertising, but that it was a comic book shop. And when you walked in there, you're tripping over something, or, you know, it was just crammed, and you had a bunch of long boxes there. But, you know, whoever owned it, they didn't put a whole lot into the shop other than just throwing comics out there. But it was hard to, you know, every once in a while you could find, I think, some pretty good stuff. I think I picked up, oh man, the most iconic comic book I can remember walking out of there with was JLA versus Predator. It was great. I walked out of there with it was Teen Titans versus Teen Titans X-Men crossover, which was I picked that up. And that was shortly after it had come out. But anyway, walking down memory lane. Let's just talk about the cover of this comic real quick. Okay, because the cover of this comic, as do sometimes a lot of comics do, they make you think that something is going to go down in this comic that actually does not. Describe the cover of this comic real quick.
You have Spider-Man in the black alien symbiote suit. In the background, you have Reed Richards pointing some sort of weapon at him, Black Cat looking like she's about to pounce, and then you have two of the most powerful beings in Marvel, in the Marvel U, and that's the Incredible Hulk and Thor. Thor is swinging his hammer and hitting Spider-Man in the side of the head. Hulk is punching Spider-Man in the other side of the head, and it is doing nothing to him.
Nothing. The man's just standing there like, okay, you got anything else? I mean, it's freaking Mjolnir hitting him in the side of the head, and then Hulk punching him on the other side. I mean, when I first saw this cover, I'm like, holy crap. The cover kind of lies. I mean, we'll get into that in the story here. But the title also. Now, I'm going to be Mr. Full Disclosure here real quick and tell you that I'm very familiar with, you know, Spider-Man and his interactions with Venom, the symbiote and all that good stuff. I don't know the details of the story. You know, when I first read this, I thought this story was something that came out before Venom was created, because it said, what if the alien costume had possessed Spider-Man? And I was sitting there thinking, well, isn't that what happened? Didn't the costume possess him? But what I didn't realize is that there was a point in which it about did. And that's kind of where this story kind of branches off. It, the point where the costume almost fully took over Peter Parker.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that there was a point in which it would. I just knew the relationship between Peter Parker and the symbiote suit was at some point it was obviously, you know, recognized that it's not doing him any good. They need to get the suit off of him for some reason. I didn't realize that it could take full possession at some point. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I've definitely learned, you know, while reading it. But let me talk about just like you said, it's volume two. It's number four in the What If series. Came out the inside cover date, October 1989. We have a guy by the name of Danny Fingerroth who wrote it. Mark Bagley is the penciler. Well, I think what you see a lot of here, and we're jumping forward. The last episode was the first issue ever of What If, and that took place in 77. So now we're 12 years ahead of time. Now, they canceled volume one at some point, and then volume two picked up. That's why we're at number four, and it's 12 years later. You know, one of the things that I love about these stories is the fact that, again, you can go anywhere you want to with a What If story. Plus, I think it's a kind of a showcase where some of the guys feel like, okay, hey, I can tell this story. I don't know if that's where a lot of writers get their opportunity to kind of step in and say, let me try this, and maybe they'll move on to something bigger. I got that feeling a lot with What If. I never felt like we got any awesome writers in there to tell a great story, although sometimes you would. But it seemed like a lot of people getting in there, and granted, there's some decent tales that are told, but it a lot of times it feels kind of like a showcase, like, hey, okay, I'm going to write this story. And they just get that one shot in there to show Marvel what they can do.
Mm.
Okay, so, you know, the first page is basically a full page of the Watcher bringing us in. Just like I had said in the last episode, the Watcher is this guy who's going to pretty much intro just about every What If that we get into. I think he kind of takes a step back in some later issues of What If. But the Watcher is now the Watcher that I recognize. So
mm-hmm.
One from the first, he just looked totally different than what we got here. But this is definitely the bulbous head Watcher. And he's stepping in, he's giving us the intro. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, the one from the first one that you did was, dude was jacked. I mean,
he was. He looked scary to me. I mean, I didn't want to mess with our Watcher here, and he's giving us a backstory on. Obviously, we know from the cover that we're going to be dealing with Spider-Man, but he kind of covers what led to Spider-Man finding the symbiotic suit, which takes place into a crossover that I'm definitely going to get into here at some point on Source Material, and that's Secret Wars. Secret Wars is a huge Marvel crossover event that pitted Hillary, I think it was Heroes versus Villains. It's been a while since I read it, but from what I understand, it's Heroes versus Villains, and basically a guy by the name of the Beyonder, this, I want to say omnipotent, but a very powerful being, comes in and just kind of like scoops up all these heroes and villains and puts them on an alien planet called Battleworld. From what I understand, he grabbed like parts of planets. Am I right here? Did he like grab like parts of planets and put something together? Or am I misthinking something?
I think so.
Or parts of the Earth.
Parts of the Earth and created to, and he teleported, and he called it Battleworld.
Mm-hmm. So we got Battleworld there. And meanwhile, while this huge battle is going on, Beyonder likes to see the fight between good and evil. Well, Spider-Man comes across this symbiotic suit. It's just kind of like, imagine a big black puddle of goo, I guess is about the best thing I can think of. But it ends up latching to Spider-Man. He ditches the red and blues, and he now has a black suit.
Yeah, the only thing I know is he thought it was just some sort of, like the comic book says, advanced material. So it was just a cool costume, and it, you know, turned out to be pretty much something that a living being that was, like you said, a symbiote, and it you know, it has to have, I mean, it's a give and take, mostly a take from the symbiote. So it's more of a parasite, really.
It augmented his powers a little bit. I mean, he had, instead of the old web shooters, I mean, he was able to swing out the suit, I'm thinking, or webs from the suit itself, I believe. Let me just go on record and say that, you know, Peter Parker's a smart man, but if I find something that latches onto me on some kind of alien planet, the first freaking thing I'm doing is trying to figure out how the hell to get it off. Now, I'm going to have to go back and read when he first found it just to figure out why in the world he thought it was such a good idea to go ahead and keep the suit on, which I'm sure there probably was, but obviously he felt that he could, you know, he's a little bit more powerful. He didn't have to change at clothes, I guess. I don't know. He obviously, and then again, it was a symbiote. When it attached to him, it might have affected his way of thinking. We're definitely going to get into that as to what's going on in regards, because just like you said, it's a give and take relationship, and the symbiote actually is taking a little bit more than what he should. So we got a rehash here. Watcher rehashes kind of things that's occurred right after he got the black suit and came home, all right? So Spider-Man comes home. He's in the midst, at this point in time, in a relationship with Felicia Hardy, Black Cat. That's her name. And they're smitten with each other in love, I guess you would say. Mary Jane, I believe, has come, and I'm assuming assuming that they have, at this point they had broken up, and Spider-Man is now seeing Felicia Hardy. However, Felicia's criminal getting into, I guess you would say, in her relationship with the Kingpin kind of caused a rift between her and Peter Parker, and they split. Now, the stuff that I'm giving you here is actually, I believe, what happened in, you know, the Marvel 616. This is the actual stuff that occurred in what we have read. So Felicia Hardy, Black Cat, and Peter Parker decide to split. Watcher tells us about how the black suit, the symbiotic suit, is actually taking Peter outside at night while he is asleep. They say here, I mean, all to fuel its own thirst for excitement. So Peter is trying to sleep while this thing is taking him out while he's unconscious and just going about the town, I guess. I don't know if he's fighting crime at that point in time or what exactly he's doing. But, you know, Peter Parker wakes up the next morning and he's like, what the hell happened? He can't understand why he's so exhausted. They do a little side thing here where they talk about how Peter Parker had saved some S.H.I.E.L.D. agents at one point because the Hulk had hit their ship or did something. He had saved these S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. Now, this, I don't think that has anything to do with the story, but I know it comes up later. Now, there's a point where I think Peter tries to tell the suit to get off of. The suit won't listen. So he mentions this to Black Cat, and Black Cat's like, why don't you go see Reed Richards? Talk to him and see what you can find out. And as he goes to see Reed Richards finds out that, you know, hey, it's the suit causing to have issues, not, you know, that's what's causing not to be able to sleep well. And I think at that point they decide to find out that it's a parasite. Reed Richards hits him with the sonic gun and they're able to remove the symbiote. And they cover the point in which if you're familiar with the movie, the symbiote, they go up to, I'm pretty sure this happens in Spider-Man 3. This has been a while since I've seen it. They go up to the clock tower in Spider-Man 3. Okay. And because the symbiote ends up getting back onto Spider-Man, he goes up to this clock tower and these bells start ringing and it just pretty much, the suit just kind of disintegrates off of Peter Parker. So then, of course, the symbiote escapes and is able to find Eddie Brock, and we get Venom, okay? So there is, as short as I can tell it, a summary of what happens in the red reality of Marvel 616. We get Venom, but what happens in this issue is it kind of picks up shortly after he comes back home from Battle World. He goes to Black Cat, and he says, look, I'm not feeling so well. Well, she says, why don't you go see Reed Richards or figure out what's going on? He ends up going to find Reed Richards of the Fantastic Four, and Reed Richards is not there. So he goes to see Kurt Connors. He can't find Reed Richards. The most knowledgeable person that he can think of is Kurt Connors. So he goes to Kurt and he says, look, pretty much the same thing. He says, this suit is not making, something's going on here. Can you run some tests? So he runs the test. He runs like an MRI or something. And when he gets out of there, Kurt looks at him and says, as far as I could tell, everything's fine. Might have some issues. There may be some kind of something I can't see. You know, might be a good idea if you can, when Reed Richards gets back, go talk. He finally gets to Reed Richards. Finally finds Reed Richards. Reed Richards hits him with the sonic gun. But now here's where what I was talking about at the beginning. As he hits him with this sonic gun, you know, the symbiote, by the way, can't stand loud sounds. I don't think I covered that, but basically loses control once it's hit with some type of loud sound. That's how they originally were able to separate Peter from the costume. Now they can't. Something's happened. Either too much time has passed, or they mentioned that one of the tests that Kurt Connors did may have helped it or assisted in joining, completely bonded with Peter Parker now. So they cannot get this costume off of Peter. And Peter's suffering. You know, he's screaming, help me, help me, and they're trying their best to get the thing off of there. Reed Richards goes so far, he says he brings up the gun and fires point blank and hits him with it. Nothing. So the symbiote is fully bonded to Peter Parker at this point. The only thing they can do is just pretty much throw him in this prison that they have there until they can figure out a better way to get the symbiote costume off of. So the next person that they enlist is another doctor, Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange is unable to do, he's in the same boat. No matter what he tries, he cannot separate this symbiote from Peter Parker. Throughout the issue, there's mention of the Hulk. The Hulk is on this rampage. Now, he doesn't show up any in the beginning of this issue, but they mention how nice it would be to be able to talk to Bruce Banner and get his opinion. Unfortunately, he's pretty well succumbed to the Hulk rage, I guess you could say, or the Hulk change. The Hulk's going around and just destroying crap, and he's not very friendly to anybody as usual. But anyway, they mention how nice it would be to be able to get Bruce Banner's opinion, but unfortunately, he is buried buried deep inside the Hulk. While they're talking about this, the symbiote is able to free himself from this prison that they're in. Takes out Doctor Strange and Dr. Richards. Now, as I say take out, I mean knock out. Doesn't kill him. He just knocks him out and escapes. We now have a Peter Parker with a Venom, well, the black costume symbiote off and out in the city, and he has escaped. Now, we cut to Black Cat's apartment, and she gets this phone call, and she runs over, she says, I can sense Peter, you know, or the spider. Their romance happened before I got into reading Spider-Man. I had heard a little bit about it, but I've never read, but obviously, she refers to Peter Parker as her spider, which I always thought was pretty neat. But anyway, she says, it's Spider, I can sense it. And she goes and runs over, grabs a phone, and there's Peter Parker on the other end. He's begging her for help. Help me, help me. And she's like, well, you know, she can't figure out what's going on. And then all of a sudden, the symbiote costume takes over the conversation and says, you know, No, I don't need you. I have all I need. There's no more Spider-Man. His life, his power is mine. Forget him forever. Black Cat is just... She's taken aback and throws the phone. She is still in costume, by the way, which she might have been just getting back. The first panel is her coming, looking like she's by the window, so I don't know if she's coming back from a robbery or whatever. But
I like to think she just relaxes in it.
Just never. She's got like seven of them in her closet there. One is for relaxation. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday.
Yeah. Sunday through Saturday.
There you go. The mask, though, I think the mask is a little unnecessary. I can understand, but I mean, you just got to put a mask on to lounge around.
You never know.
All right, so she's upset, and she immediately goes over to Fantastic Four headquarters, and she is pretty much giving Reed Richards what, you know, I sent him over here to give you it for you to help him, and this is what happens. He, you know, he's obviously not been helped. Reed Richards is the smartest man in the Marvel U, pretty much. I mean, one could make an argument that, but she don't give a crap. She goes over there and gives him what for. And then we kind of cut to a page. She's so upset that she has to go and rob some people. She ends up robbing, I'm guessing a jewelry store of some sort. Oh, no. It's a prestigious New York auction house, which, you know, she should have just, I don't understand why she had to go and rob. She probably could have just bought stuff with all the money that she's got to own a cordless phone and all. It's an auction house, let's see. But anyway, she robs this place, proceeds to give these riches to the poor, kind of like your modern day Robin. She's so upset, she's got to go out and rob a place. So she proceeds to give, you know, there's a couple panels where she's just like throwing these diamonds and stuff at these homeless people. Then also mention those SHIELD agents that at the beginning, and obviously this is just to show the consequences of what has happened. The SHIELD agents that were saved by Spider-Man and the regular 616 are now dead because of Hulk's rampage. Which maybe that's what's setting up this next battle, because we immediately cut to a battle where the Avengers are fighting the Hulk. They're trying to, you know, basically best the Hulk to try and get him to, you know, either calm down or whatever, you know, that they always got to do. Finally, they decide, okay, well, look, we can't do anything right now. Actually, as a matter of fact, they find out that the Hulk is being controlled by one of Doctor Strange's, one of his enemies, a guy by the name of Nightmare. He somehow manipulated the Hulk and turned him into the rampaging Hulk that he is, buried Banner deep below, I'm guessing. But anyway, Doctor Strange opens up this portal, okay? And it's portal, they specifically call the portal is going to a dimension called a crossroads dimension. The Hulk is lunging after Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange has opened this portal up, and they're about to be rid of the Hulk forever, or at least for a little while, so he's not hurting anybody. Which, that kind of reminds me of a lot of Planet Hulk right there. Like, okay, yeah. The way to get rid of the guy is get him the hell out of here. That's about your only option.
Ship him off, man.
Get him the hell out. Just as he is about to fall through this portal, a black hand grabs the Hulk's ankle and yanks him out of there and throws him. And here it is, the black costume, this black symbiote costume Spider-Man, who's now fully taken over. Okay, this is not Peter Parker in any way, shape, or form. This is definitely the alien symbiote. And he's got, I mean, the way that they drew him, which, by the way, the art in this, pretty decent art. It's not horrible, that's for sure. I mean, I definitely enjoy the art. But, you know, he's got tendrils coming off of him. You can tell he's definitely looking more alien than normal. But he takes the Hulk and he tosses him. Yes. Yes, he does. Takes the Hulk and throws the Hulk and knocks out Doctor Strange. And of course, that pisses the Hulk off. The Hulk comes after him. The Jade Giant faces off with our black costume symbiote. And now you got where there's a panel where he's lunging at the Hulk, grabs a hold of the Hulk, and just starts wrapping himself around the Hulk with all the little tendrils and all the tentacles and stuff like that. And thrown to the back, and just thrown off to the side, is a underwear-clad Peter Parker. I'm trying to describe it as best as I can. I want you guys to picture it. He's in his underwear. but okay, so we got the Hulk. He's sitting there fighting. He's clawing at the alien symbiote that is now, you know, kind of covering up his face and covering up his upper torso. But the Wasp stops for a second and looks over at Peter Parker. Here it is. It's Peter Parker laying there, but he's a gray-haired, you know, withered-away old man. And he just looks up at Janet and he's the Wasp and says, "Help me." He's feeble. So what you see here is that the symbiote has used up Peter Parker. I wouldn't say to his fullest extent because Peter Parker's still alive, which makes sense because obviously if he would die, the symbiote would probably die also. So you kind of understand now that the point of him discarding Peter Parker and heading for the Hulk is limitless power. If you're looking for somebody that's got staying power, I guess you would say, or somebody that's probably not going to die, the Hulk is definitely one of the strongest people, or the strongest creatures out there. Now we've got a little bit of a bigger problem. Now we have freaking symbiote Hulk on our hands, because as much as the Hulk tries and tries and tries to tear this freaking alien costume off of him, the next page is nothing but, well, that is a Venom face if there is one.
Oh,
I mean, that looks absolutely like Venom. He's now taken over the Hulk. Now, let me ask you this. If you don't know this. I don't know. I'm just asking, spitballing here. Has Venom ever taken over the Hulk in the 616 that you know of?
Not to my knowledge. I don't know that he's taken over the Hulk. He's been on a few others, but not the Hulk to my knowledge.
I mean, dude... You might as well just pack it in, because as soon as you have the symbiote taking over the Hulk, I mean, it's going to get ugly really quick.
When he's Hulked out, when he is the Hulk, I mean, he's not smart anyway. And then you get Venom, who pretty much poisons your mind. And so you've got, as they said in the Avengers movie, you've got this, what, you know, 9-10 foot rage monster that's taken over by an alien symbiote that just wants to destroy as well, to fuel his own adrenaline rush. I mean, that's terrifying.
Yeah. I don't know how, better wake Dr. Strange back up and put about 20 portals out there and just hope his ass falls in there. That's about all there is to it. You want to get him the hell off of the planet for sure.
Exactly.
Geez. So, now we have Venom Hulk. First thing he does is he just pretty much, you know, gets the Avengers off of him, and his trademark Hulk leap leaps out of the area. So now we have Venom Hulk on the loose, and we don't know where he's at. So now we cut to, that's the end of the battle. Hulk leaves. Venom Hulk is out of there. So a few days later, we're at the Avengers Mansion. Peter Parker is kind of recovered. Okay, this process, I'm guessing, it's permanent, because he's not regressing back to his young age in any way. It has taken its toll on Peter Parker. It's pretty much made him. I mean, how old would you say that Peter Parker looks?
They said when the Wasp found him, do you believe they said it was he was in his mid 80s, a deathly ill man in his mid 80s, appears to be.
Yeah. I mean, he's sunken in cheeks, hair completely white. But here he is. He's resting at the Avengers Mansion. Avengers are kind of Thor and I believe that's Captain Marvel at the time, I think, that's sitting there talking with him. Yeah. Felicia is there. Black Cat is there. And she is, you know, they pretty much go into they talk about what happened and what caused Peter Parker to become old, just like we were talking about. The symbiote kind of pretty much used him up. Felicia's very upset. I mean, she's extremely upset that this has been done to her, you know, her lover. Is pretty much on a mission to figure out how we can take care of the to take care of the symbiote. Thor is concerned, just like they were earlier, the fact that Bruce Banner is still inside the mind of the Hulk, or still inside the Hulk, I guess you would say. You know, they can't kill Venom without potentially probably killing the Hulk and in effect killing Bruce Banner. So we've got ourselves a conundrum here on how we're going to handle Venom-Hulk situation. So, you know, they kind of bring that up, but, you know, Felicia Hardy is pretty well set that she thinks the alien costume should definitely die. Somehow, this Peter Parker's situation needs to be avenged. Now, we cut to another few days later. Peter Parker's up and about. He's walking with a cane, and he's deciding to go and head to Aunt May's house. Aunt May hasn't heard hide nor hair of Peter Parker for quite a while, obviously is because of what's been going on, and she's pretty concerned. So, you know, the point of Peter Parker going and visiting Aunt May is pretty much to kind of alleviate her concerns, or at least potentially say his goodbye. Peter Parker's unrecognizable, so when he goes up there and he talks to her, he doesn't come out and say, "Hey, I'm your nephew," or anything like that. He says, "Hey, you know, I'm a friend of your nephew's at the Daily Bugle, and I just wanted to come by." And he pretty much tells Aunt May goodbye. It's a touching way of him being able to say goodbye, because he knows that he's not going to be young Peter Parker again, and she's never going to probably understand what's happened. And he proceeds to tell him bye, and then he walks away. As he's walking away, you know, he's crying, and Aunt May is, I don't know if she kind of recognizes that it might be him.
There's one thing that kind of caught my eye when Spider-Man was jumping towards the Hulk. Said the Hulk lashed out at his known unknown foe, and just as the prey knows when it's being stalked by the predator, the raging behemoth suddenly knows fear.
Yeah, that caught my eye too, man. When I first read it, you know, the Hulk rarely, if anything, is somebody you would expect to be. He's always rage first. But
right.
Yeah, they show his eyes in there, and for sure, that's definitely, you know, he's still pissed off. It's not like he took off running or anything, but he definitely could see he was outmatched, which is scary to think about, really. I mean, Venom being that powerful, which now he's twice powerful with or taking over the Hulk, so it's crazy. But okay, I'm going to turn it over to you, man. Finish us out here. We're halfway through the book.
As you said, he was leaving May. She said that the older gentleman at the door reminded her so much of Peter as if it was somehow him. Mary Jane is there to comfort her. It says as she's walking, the withered old man is walking away, in this reality she'll never again see, much less marry Peter Parker, Mary Jane. So cut to next morning, Avengers Mansion, with a nice little plaque outside of it that says Avengers Mansion.
Looking for the Avengers Mansion? Right over there. It's the one with Avengers Mansion on it.
And the giant bullseye on the door. So, but we have, next morning at Avengers Mansion, we have Reed Richards looking for Peter Parker. Says that he's making progress and devising a means to attract the creature, and he walks into to where Peter is doing his research, and he finds Peter Parker dead of old age. So Peter is dead of old age. So next day, of course, I guess it's next day, they have an all-superhero funeral for him with Johnny Storm giving the eulogy, and I mean, you have the Fantastic Four, everybody's there. The Avengers of Fantastic Four, Felicia Hardy, of course, she's left to mourn alone all day and night. It looks like she's been standing there, well, not all night, but all day, and all of a sudden this dark shadow comes behind her, and she realizes it is none other than the kingpin of crime himself, Wilson Fisk. And he just came by to pay his last respect to a worthy foe. He then tells Felicia Hardy that business goes on. Can he offer her a lift? And she actually says, yes, I could use a ride. So they go, so you know something's up here. So it looks like that the kingpin has a little business proposition for her because she's worked for him before.
I was going to say, at first, you know, she is defiant against him. She's like, I'd rather.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then she's like, you know what? Yeah, I could use a ride. So, you know, they're just like you said, it seems like there may be something up.
So we go back into Reed. He's doing his calculations. He's doing his big brain thing. And he finally comes up. He devises a weapon that can kill it, that can track, not only track it, but kill the symbiote. He gets a hold of the Wasp, leader of the Avengers at this time. And they have found a way to track it down. they want to, of course, remember that Bruce Banner is in there as well, but they're there to end this because it has claimed one of their friends' lives. So several hours later, you see a Quinjet land in South Dakota at Mount Rushmore, and everybody jumps out. We see the Vision, Human Torch, Doctor Strange, Thor, Star Fox, not sure what he's going to do, but Captain Marvel, who is also known as, I think, like Photon and Pulsar, and she had like three different names.
Captain Marvel was one of these characters that, you know, I know very little about, in this iteration anyway. I know a little bit about Carol Danvers, as I think she's Captain Marvel, I'm certain at this point in time.
And then you got Scarlet Witch and, of course, Reed Richards. So they're tracking him down. They're going to try to pin him and see if they can kill this alien being. And so we cut 20 minutes later to Thor wandering through the woods, reliving how he was fighting an enemy of Asgard. And it was, I'm not sure what kind of, it was a battle with Surtur? Sure, I can't tell you his name. But it goes on. He hears laughter, and the whole, like, it looks like a whole hillside being torn apart, and it is the Hulk, Venom Hulk. And he wants to go contact the others, but Venom Hulk sees him, and he says, "Surrender, alien, save your needless pain," he says. And then Venom seems to devise a little plan. It says, "Please, Thor, I'm truly remorseful for what I did to Spider-Man. I did not know I was hurting him until it was too late. With the Hulk, I have achieved a true symbiote," and he's restoring Banner's mind in return for the Hulk's power. So he's spinning this, you know, this little web, no pun intended. It seems like to pull Thor a little closer, and then he says, you know, Thor finally says, "You know what? Maybe you're telling the truth, maybe you're not, but we'll see when you've been pulled into custody." And of course, Venom says that he wouldn't be imprisoned again, and he shoots webs at Thor. Thor deflects it with his hammer, but only to be distracted, and he gets a full-on left hook from the Hulk and Venom, the power of Hulk and Venom. So there's a full-on big battle going on. I mean, we've got the hammer being thrown right into the face, people being thrown into the mountain and everything. So finally, that one big blow from the hammer, Thor walks over and he sees the creature oozing off the Hulk, and it's Bruce Banner actually laying there in his underwear. So so we've got Bruce Banner in his underwear with
cannot believe this was approved by the Comics Code Authority. Unbelievable.
I know, it's terrible. It's just terrible. But everybody's just running around in their skivvies. But you've got, so Thor goes over, he picks it up, he thinks it's dead. He says, "Dead by my hand." And he sees that Bruce Banner is finally alive. So he goes to tend to him, only to be attacked by the symbiote and is being taken over. And he says, "Soon I shall possess the power of a god." So not only did he take the Hulk's power, he's after Thor now. So Thor tries to fight him off.
There is very, you know, in the Avengers movie, the battle I love the most was Thor versus Hulk. I mean, that was my favorite battle in that whole movie. And you know, it's left to figure out, well, who is more powerful. I mean, obviously, there could be an argument for Thor here, especially with the power of Mjolnir and, you know, the fact that he's a god from freaking Asgard. They mentioned it earlier in the book that, you know, as foreshadowing, you know, what if he would have got a hold of you or something like that? When Peter was talking to Thor, definitely. The fears are now starting to become a reality.
Yes, absolutely. Thor is fighting it off the best he can, so he takes the hammer, because I can't pronounce the name of it, Mjolnir. There we go. He casts it on the ground, and he hits it with full power, full on all the fury of lightning, and all he does is just hit himself. He weakens himself so that the alien symbiote can take over further. I mean, we've got Reed Richards blasting him, and it does nothing. Because the symbiote actually says, "I have the power, all the power of my previous host." So he's got all of Spider-Man's strength, and not only that, but he has all of the Hulk's strength. So he's taking over Thor. Yeah, exactly. So Reed Richards finally decides, we can't allow the entity to take over control over Thor. The time has come, and this is where I love 80s comic books, for the Terminator blast. So he can't... the Terminator Black.
Pretty scary.
So we've got everybody's wanting to do it, but Reed Richards can't bring himself to do it. The symbiote actually calls him the soft-hearted fool, but the Asgardian is his, and he must get away to completely bond with him. So he runs into a hole, into a cave. So Johnny Storm runs after him. He is dispelled quickly with with lightning, and then Captain Marvel comes at him and with ultra-powerful microwaves, and she strikes. But she is redirected into the hammer, shoots her back from whence she came. Star Fox is there as a safety net, and that's about it. He flies up and catches her, and that's about all he's good for.
Made him useful.
Yay! So we've got Thor. Thor, I mean, they're trying to figure out what's going on. They don't want to kill Thor, but they know they need to end this. Reed finally says, we'll have no choice but to go in for blood. So it cuts back to Venom Thor, and he's completing the bond, and all of a sudden he says, wait, somebody approaches. And he says, I'll vanquish him. This one as easily as the others, but then the creature seems to recognize the newcomer, and he is filled with fear because he turns around, and it is the Black Bolt. And that's when I really got into it. I was like, wow, the Black Bolt, the immortals from the moon, man.
Black Bolt is the leader of the Inhumans.
Inhumans.
His power.
Okay, immortal. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all right. But his power set is the whole reason why he's scared, why the Venom symbiote is scared of. And they're basically, when the Black Bolt speaks or even whispers, his voice is so incredibly powerful that it levels just about anything that's brought up. The absolute coolest, I know this, I don't want to disparage the story in any way, but the absolute coolest time I ever seen Black Bolt use his voice was during, not Planet Hulk, but what was after that? It was
World War Hulk?
Thank you. Yeah, World War Hulk, where Black Bolt, Hulk shows up on the moon, I think. You know, freaking Black Bolt is like screaming at the Hulk, and the Hulk's skin is like getting tore off, and the Hulk just keeps coming and coming, and ends up hitting Black Bolt. I could be incorrect, but I think he is able to survive Black Bolt's voice. But again, he's extremely powerful, and he was keeping the Hulk at bay for a little bit. But if anybody's going to know fear against a sonic attack, it's definitely going to be Venom.
So Venom Thor turns around and sees the man who can destroy planets with his voice, and immediately almost craps himself.
Yeah.
And so
that may not be tentacles coming off the costume.
He said, I'll kill you before you can do any harm. Yeah, may not be. But he finally, he mans up. He says, I'll kill you before you do any harm. But even as the entity attacks, it says, and this is where I lost it, Black Bolt scream. And the sonic force that emits from his vocal cords can literally shatter mountains. And the Black Bolt has destroyed Mount Rushmore. All the presidents are gone.
It's gone.
And it's gone, dude. There is nothing but a crater left. So we cut to Black Bolt helping up Thor. Everybody screamed, it worked. We have this black puddle, this mass laying next to him, and he completely separated the alien symbiote and Thor. Immediately, Reed goes into nerd mode and starts scanning it, saying we can, it's still alive. I could devise a special cell for it. Dr. Strange comes in and says, no, I'll banish it to the crossroad dimensions where it can live without hurting or being hurt. So they're like, you're right, do it quickly. And as he begins to cast the spell, you see a blast come out of nowhere, and it hits the alien symbiote, and somebody yells, got him. And they have killed the alien symbiote, and it says, pretty good shooting for a girl, huh? And it turns around, it is Felicia Hardy, the Black Cat, with another, what they call an Omni Blaster. So it seems, because she is so upset, she calls it a space vampire, killed the man she loved, and nobody had the nerve to do anything for it. It seems that she has gotten her hands on another Omni Blaster from an unknown source, and she tosses at him and says, keep the lousy gun. And she walks off, fades off into the sunset. As it says, the price that Felicia Hardy has paid indeed. She was in Peter's room the night he died. She Xeroxed his notes and those of Reed's blaster design. And she gave them to the one man who employed scientists with the ability to make the weapon. And that man, of course, was the kingpin of crime. And it seems that she has, in essence, traded her soul, traded her life, and has become employed, an employee of the kingpin just to get back at the alien symbiote that killed the man she loved. and says, what was her revenge worth the price that she had to pay for it? The Black Cat doesn't really know, but she'll have the rest of her life to figure it out. She has truly traded her life for revenge on the creature that killed her one and only love.
So, I mean, it's this story, as action-packed as it is really, it's a love story.
Absolutely.
I mean, she is, you could see in her face there in those last few panels, especially, I mean, she's got this smile on her face. It's creepy looking because she's it's almost like she's smiling, but she's got tears coming down from her eyes because she's so enraged by the fact that this thing killed her love that she's so happy now that it's ended and that the symbiote's dead and that she had the opportunity to kill it. As stories go, I would say this is definitely a romance story about how, you know, she was able to go in there and get revenge on the thing that took her, I don't know how serious they got. Obviously, Spider-Man and Felicia Hardy pretty heavy at one point. Mm-hmm. And for her to feel this way, it must have been at some point. But anyway,
mostly based off of the emotion felt behind the mask.
Okay, this is a good story. Like I said, first time I had a chance to read it, I enjoyed it.
Good. This was, I mean, it really shows the, I guess, the scope of what could have happened if he'd let it take over, like Eddie Brock did, like Flash Thompson almost did. But Flash Thompson pretty much has control over the symbiote now, because it really bonded with Eddie Brock and drove him pretty much insane and almost killed him. But then you've got the lives that were saved by Spider-Man, the lives that were apparently touched by Spider-Man. I mean, he made friends in the Avengers. He is an Avenger. So, I mean, it goes past that point of, Black Cat finally forgot about the action, the adventure, and that's what turned her on about Spider-Man and got to know who Spider-Man was and loved him. And when he died, she basically sold her soul to the devil to get revenge. So, I mean, there's a lot of weight on this one story, of the death of Spider-Man, pretty much saying, there's a lot of things that could have happened if this actually went down. Not only that, but Mount Rushmore's gone.
It got blown up.
It got blown up.
Yeah. I echo those sentiments. Like I said, it's the great part about these books is the fact that, we get a glimpse as to what could have happened. It's a fun alternate tale to weave. And as I said before, nobody's safe. I mean, Peter Parker just died. Bruce Banner almost died. I mean, that's what's fun about these what if stories. I don't have anything else to talk about on it. Again, I think the art was decent. I mean, it wasn't horrible. I've seen some what ifs that have had some pretty cool boy. Some pretty,
pretty
bad
crappy
art. Mark Bagley did a good job. Mr. Mm-hmm. Danny Fingeroth, he did a decent job telling the story. So that was volume 2, number 4. For anybody out there that missed it at the beginning, issue 4. I don't know if what ifs are very hard to find. You ever try and go find any what ifs in back issue bins or anything like that?
I have not been successful in finding really good ones. I'm just gonna have to break down and just buy whatever I can get, because I forgot until this point how much I really liked them.
Yeah, they're fun. I remember I think it was a couple years back when we had one of the comic book or the comic cons here in Marietta, one of the first few that we had. 50-cent bins. I was able to find a lot of recent issues of what if. Some of the older stuff is hard to find, but mm-hmm. usually around my area anyway, I could go in there and pick up. Volume 1 is tough to get a hold of.
Yeah.
Volume 2 is the one where you can go in there, and the one is from the 80s and early 90s. Pretty commonplace. You can go in there and find them pretty easy. So
quick question.
Yeah.
I have in your comic book searches, going through all these back issues and things, have you ever run into any of the what does that is the parody of what if?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I can't say that I've seen any. I own three or four. The very humorous take on some of the what if story. I mean, it's so freakishly out there because man, there's so much stuff that happens in those books and it's so goofy. Man, those were late 80s too, I'm pretty sure, early 90s.
I think so, yeah.
I have first 3 issues, and I bought those straight off the newsstand. But as for seeing any, man, I can't say that I've ever seen any back issues. Of course, I've never really went in and looked. And I don't know how many issues are out there. couldn't be no more than 10, because I swear I've not seen any more. I can envision the covers to those books, but I swear I don't think I've seen anything above 10, issue number 10 on those. I could be wrong, mm-hmm. but again, I don't know.
I think they, from what I've read, they ran about 26 issues between 88 and 93, I think.
Okay. I think I've got like the first three or four. It's really cartoonish and off the wall stuff. Okay. So this is your number one. Give me another what if that you probably would like to mention for somebody to go out there and read other than this one.
What if Wolverine became Lord of the Vampires?
That is one I'm pretty sure I own physical copy of.
Me too.
I just have not had a chance to read it. Well, we're going to talk about one of if you've got time, my man, we'll bring you back on again here. You know,
absolutely.
At some point here, we'll definitely do that one. I think I've got that one. It's been a good show, my man. Anything else you'd like to say before we get into plugs?
No, that's it, man. Thank you so much for having me on, man. Once again, it's always a blast, and this was my favorite what if. So thank you for that.
Thank you very much for joining us. Do not forget to subscribe to our new home by punching in W2M Network on just about any podcast platform to get all of our content into your audio feed. Also, give a like to the Rattlitch in Broadcasting Network and W2MNet.com Facebook page in order to stay on top of everything that we have to offer. If you'd like to follow the Source Material Podcast on social media, just follow @SourceMatCast on Twitter, and we are on Facebook @SourceMaterialComicsPodcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, please feel free to share. We look forward to entertaining you again soon.